That's why I'm all in bed. Nobody gives me sympathy.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
I'm afraid no such peasant is available to call upon your response. Instead, you have with you one Sir Weirdington Esquire.
Yes, of course. Of course. How could I forget each week, every week? Hi, we're back once again. Welcome to the Old Boy Is My Heart Not In This One episode. Of the podcast, because we're on a chapter 33.
This is the one where we get to celebrate the death of our most deserving protagonist.
Yep. We're
you can take that either way. Like in the most positive interpretation, like she gets to finally rest. the author can no longer torment her. She is
free. She finally has his permission to die. Yeah, we're on chapter 33, Black. So I mentioned about this last week, but there is a massive content warning in the middle of this chapter, or close to the end of it. So if you're not comfortable with graphic depictions of rape and physical violence against a character, I would strongly recommend bucking out of the rest of this episode and just wait for our review next week.
Another rape.
This is the most graphic one in the story so far. So I strongly recommend for people who are, you know, reasonably uncomfortable with it, and I totally understand, obviously, this is why the content warning is in the first place, I would just recommend bucking on this chapter. Otherwise, welcome to chapter 33. But first, Weird, what did we learn last week?
Blackjack fucking died. a lot of dumb nonsense. The only two things interesting of note is sort of a kind of a subversion of expectations that the main bad guy who we were introduced an episode ago, a chapter ago, we were introduced to this heel. I hope that's not picking up on the mic. We're still still doing renovations down here in the bunker. Blackjack and company wind up tower or airship, some sort of evil structure that basically the evil helicarrier from Captain America Winter Soldier, primed to hold the entire setting hostage with its very big guns. The head of the Steel Rangers turns out to have long since lost the respect and following of their subordinates, who are now all on board for Bond villain McDickface, also is a horse. There's a big showdown on top of the Death Star, wherein for the first time ever, the big silver gun is used to do something actually impressive or interesting, which is to fire down at the instead of at the baddie, at the building, thus eliminating the threat, and restoring the dubious status quo.
Things will suck slightly less going forwards.
Well, and also no one will ever, probably ever know that they were ever meaningfully imperiled at all. You know, come to think of it, let's think back to all the places and peoples who would have been really hurt by this. Oh no. Oh no. Oh, you mean the Mega Mart would be?
You mean the capitalist nightmare town? The religious priest.
Yeah, Nightmare Town, or the Nightmare Town, or the one full of assholes.
Or the other one full of other assholes.
All of these poor... I don't think it needed to bother Blackjack, but, you know, good on you, I guess.
You saved a bunch of jerks from themselves. Good job.
Surrender, we will turn this place into a burnt wasteland. Burnt wasteland. The craters will be deeper.
Your suffering will be slightly more so.
Blackjack, as a result of this, was carried away by the recoil into the water, suffused with extra double hyper cancer.
Yes, and she's also missing both of her eyes now.
Okay.
Because she got one of them, took it out by one of the grenades.
All right, so her other fancy eye also got... She no longer has rad eyes. just the old double eye patch.
I suppose that's one way to nerf your character.
No, she has grown more powerful than you could possibly, like, one eye patch. That's really badass. That's a sign of like a grizzled like kind of character. Like, eye patches are innately cool. And so what's cooler than that? Two eye patches. That's where we left. It was just with our eyeless, even more jelly boned, our eyeless, noodle hoofed. Cancer victim sinking into the bottom of a presumably mostly poison lake.
See, but yeah. And also, like, pieces of the, like, ship are coming apart around her as well as this is happening. So, I guess I should do a perk, but, like, whoops, we still haven't hit a perk this week either. But instead of hitting, because we were at 95% last week, and this week, or no, 95% 2 weeks ago, then last week we just got a bunch of error signs instead of getting a perk, so we'll have to see what we get this week. For comedy and also narrative reasons, I actually have to spoil what the perk is this week, so we'll have to see when we get there. But I guess I should just get on with actually like doing the chapter and not delaying this any further. I don't know, what do you think, Weird?
I mean, within the fiction of our podcast, I am a jukebox and thus completely inanimate.
beyond
some of my like hidden compartments, but those are just filled with weapons and one sandwich.
It's like an egg salad sandwich, and the eggs have turned a long ago. Christ. Longest sigh. All right, so chapter 33. We open back up to more Blackjack drowning. There is a pretty long extended sequence of Blackjack falling into the sea, lamenting how awful everything is, desperately scrambling in a blind state to try and like get above water. And like the last we see of this scene is BJ like desperately trying to like maintain a like air pocket that's kind of been like created from the falling debris that like that's slowly like losing its air pocket until like BJ like actually like just blacks out.
Kicking with all the force of her just completely disabled limbs.
Yeah,
I don't understand why we're following anything that's happening to this.
I guess since they're noodles now, they're now more hydrodynamic. Like she's just twirling them.
Especially within the context of like the pastel horse flash animation, I'm imagining her like flooping around like a squid, like an octopus, like.
It's Blackjacktopus. Oh man. Anyways, hard cut into Blackjack waking up, and I was worried about
one thing.
Which was?
For her to drown in a poison ocean. But
I wanted to think about how I wanted to explain this scene, and because this entire sequence I'm about to describe is entirely pointless, But let's run through just for comedy purposes and also to pad the runtime. So Blackjack wakes up. She's completely fine for some mysterious reason. She, like, all of her limbs are back together. She has her eyes.
Dream sequence.
Dream sequence. It's all a dream sequence, and none of this matters. But it's all a big, dumb, stupid dream sequence where Blackjack is like, she thinks she's in the future. Like, she gets told that, like, oh yeah, we traded the Maltese EXE to Sanguine, and you got your body back, but it took you 20 years, and now everything's terrible. And the only detail I remember liking about this dream sequence is that, like, Glory got her wing back, but, like, because she had to be, like, horribly mutated to be able to have her wings back, she's now, like, all mutiny, and she's, like, covered in eyes over her wings and stuff, which initially sounds really cool, but then when you think about it in the Flash animation perspective of just, like, copy-pasted pony eyes onto the wings, it's fucking hilarious.
I'm still here for it.
Like, it just looks like an animation error. That's what I immediately envision with it. But also aesthetically, I do think the idea of, like, a weird body horror monster version of Glory would have been really cool. But since none of this could be committed to, whatever, 21 is evil in this future for no reason, and he ends up shooting Blackjack, and then she wakes back up again. But this time she's on the Seahorse, the boat that the sea pirates have, kind of drifting in and out of consciousness like she oft does.
Oh, 21 was evil in the context of her vision.
Yeah.
In no other context.
In no other context. But he, like, I don't know. It's a dumb, pointless dream sequence. That's the only thing worth bringing up is the cool Glory body horror monster version. And that's about it.
I don't know. At a glance, it sounds like just a cool... She just has literal angel wings.
She, yeah, but, like, yeah, the archaic interpretation of angels, yeah.
I don't know, wings covered with eyes sounds pretty rad.
I'm like, here for it. Right. Admittedly, it is really rad, it's just, it means nothing because it's a dream sequence, yeah.
It's silent, like, I don't know, I think one of us is doomed to, like, try and, like, render this.
Yes.
Because I want to see, like, I actually do now need to see, like an eerie... like traditional angel wing covered in eyes, but they're like big pony eyes.
it's just a weird angel pony thing. That's an old biblical angel. Yeah. Anyways, I got lots to talk about today.
Be not afraid. Be not afraid.
Be not afraid. But yeah, the crew is furiously trying to bring Blackjack back to life, sticking her with all sorts of drugs to keep her up and alive, and Glory is adamant about, like, putting enough Hydra into her to, like, regenerate her eyes, which is obviously impossible, but Glory is not in a great mind state right now, and she only really stops when PJ, like, is lucid enough to beg her to stop sticking drugs in her. Man, so I guess, like, something that brings to mind that I want to talk about, that's something I hate about this character, is that, like, BJ is supposed to be, like, a recovering drug addict, right? One of the things about recovering drug addicts that is, like, in real life and in stories time immemorial, is that one of the big problems is you really can't, like... they can't really ever take drugs again, or they will relapse, which makes, like, doing doctoring on them very difficult and is, like, a source of tension in stories at the very least. And, like,
yeah, we cannot just... give this person an opiate.
Yeah. We can't, because you know what? That means she's immediately going to be back on them again. Like, that's just what's going to happen. But, like, there's no opportunity taken for that, because, like, whatever.
Well, like, other problems, like, yeah, body has a massive resistance to it.
We have to give her a lot of opiates to do anything to her now, yeah. I don't know, it's a missed opportunity in the storytelling that, like, BJ's supposed to be this, like, for a while was horribly abusing drugs, and then, like, that just kind of just goes away and doesn't matter anymore through the powers of magic science. Which, like, I don't know, not to, like, overinflate how good FOE is, but, like, one of the core things in that story is the main character becomes a drug addict for a while, and they make a pretty strong mention that she literally cannot take drugs ever again, or she will relapse, and that's a big core thing in the story. But, you know, whatever. Fuck it. Who cares? This fix is stupid. We get caught up on, like, how BJ got saved. Basically, the sea ponies, the fish ponies, saved her, because, you know, 21 was going to save them last chapter. Also, Rampage is basically the mast right now, because, like, they're terrified of the idea that she's going to slip into, like, baby killer mode, basically. Because BJ is in such a, like, indefensible state. But yeah, this is where it can start getting very confusing and weird. And dumb. Alright, so they talk about the sort of, like, happenings going on over the last couple of days, because BJ's been out of it for a while now at this point. Basically, the Steel Rangers are just over now at this point. Like, the only surviving members are, like, Steel Rangers small contingent. And, like, the main story is also, like, Rangers are completely disbanded as well at this point. For those playing at home and are trying to figure out how the timelines make any sense, if they've actually read the original story. They also mentioned that the Reapers have also, like, retreated, basically, like, they kind of quit once the guns started firing, like the ship cannon started firing. They basically decided, like, this war wasn't worth having anymore. Because they were so severely outgunned. But there's also, like, mention that, like, there's, like, something of a ceasefire, but a bunch of the gangs aren't really listening to that, and they're kind of, like, starting to tear each other apart, because this whole thing is falling apart, and it's a big mess.
I mean, yeah, I got... No, wait. Sure.
Well, I mean, like, the gangs were never, like, terribly aligned with each other. They were just given, like, a common enemy, and, like, now that that's kind of, like, gone, like, the, like, uneasy rivalries that they all had have kind of, like, they're now in, like, a bad position where they're all, like, in fighting distance of each other, so, like, are all now just opportunistically tearing each other apart.
Way to keep the gangs in line, heavy scare quotes there.
Yep.
Horse Bronson.
He's very bad at his job. But, yeah. Glory, for the most part of this chapter, is playing codependent doctor nurse for this whole thing. She pushes really hard on the idea that, like, no, they need to, like, go take the pip buck, give it to Sanguine, get the, like, get whatever treatment they can get for Blackjack, and they're gonna fix her literally as soon as they can. And there's a lot of arguing between her and 21 about, like, what is the right course of action. But BJ is pretty adamant that she needs to just, like, no, I, like, you can't do this. Like, I'm not letting you, like, turn this over to that monster just for the sake of saving me.
How is BJ a part of this conversation?
Because she's the main character, I guess. is the short answer.
I'm just reminded, like, I wonder if Sombra's ever been badly injured in his entire fucking life. Like,
probably not. Ever, like,
because, like, I'm just thinking back to the time that, in a hilarious reversal of roles, my bicycle rode me down a hill. There was somebody else with me, and we were kids, and I lifted my head up, and my thinking was pretty cogent. I lift my head up and I looked at the other person and say, all right, go up the hill, get my mom, make sure to, like, bring some antiseptic or something. I'm not sure I can walk on my own power. Everything's gonna be all right. But what I instead said was,
I guess the only excuse I could give is that BJ is on some pretty heavy painkillers at this point, so she's, like, kind of gargling out, like, "Bruh, don't do it," kind of stuff. Like, No, like, let me die.
Headcanon. She is convinced that she is, like, making completely intelligible, articulate points, but what everyone else hears...
Yeah, she's just marble-mouthed the whole time. But yeah, she decides that she can't, like, deal with all of the everything happening right now anymore, and Glory and 21 are arguing pretty hard, so BJ decides to just bail out of the circuit, like, the sequence by, like, convenient memory orbing herself.
There's one rolling down a nearby slope, and she like hucked her weight like over the pain. She like wiggled closer to it so she could tap her head on it.
Yeah, it's important to note that like she is now complete, like her legs do not work anymore. Like they're so banged up that she can't like noodle anymore. She can kind of drag herself a little bit, but that's about it. And she's also completely blind now. So yeah, this really
so
just
there's isn't... no okay. Wait, she just heard the faint hum of one, or maybe
no.
One. Like she was so frustrated by like hearing these two talk, she started beating her head against the ground. And lo and behold, just beneath the earth, just under the surface silt.
We long established that the floor is entirely memory orb, so she just tapped her head to the ground. and convenient memory orb.
This story is so dumb! Story is so bad!
And it's also like, this is also a terribly uninteresting memory orb, too. It's just to, like, recontextualize a scene that happened really early on, where, like, remember how I talked about how there was, like, a manor where, like, all the rich people gunned down, like, the poor people that were convinced they had a secret super stable underneath their manor, and, like, they had to heroically defend themselves from the mobs of the poor? So we get recontextualized and find out that the rich people were even more blameless in this, because... The reason why they thought there was a stable there was because the poor got tipped off by an evil organization, like part of the OIA, that there was a stable there. They were lied to, so the nobles were even more guiltless in shooting these poor peasants. And this is mostly just a scene to like establish that like Vanity died like a hero, which I guess matters. And again, we hear about Project Redoubt, which is like a super stable of some kind, which I've established in a previous episode that like that's infuriating character assassination on behalf of a specific character, because like there's a specific character who is in charge of the stables being constructed, who like hated the fucking nobility so much that like one of the stables was rigged to kill them all. And, like, the idea that, like, no, she actually also built a second stable that was, like, for the rich people, secretly, or was under her nose or something, is, like, just bad. Like, it's just fucking dumb. It's such a weird, like, I don't know why you did this moment in your writing, but fuck it, whatever. Back out of the memory orb. Okay, small technical difficulties, don't have to worry about it too much, folks, just kind of had to stop recording, but we're back again, so I lost where I was. Shit.
Okay, so she conked her head against the ground, and just beneath the silt, just beneath the surface earth, was another memory orb, and she was...
Oh yeah, now I remember, yeah, I remember, yeah. The memory orb wasn't anything terribly important. BJ wakes up and gives herself like a proper actual good once-over. Besides being blind, yeah, her lungs are damaged enough that it hurts to breathe. She can feel her heartbeat perpetually, and her legs are so incredibly fucked up that her muscles are basically like damaged to the point where she can't really like move them anymore. Also, she is missing one pip buck, which gets her to panic really hard because she immediately presumes that, like, Glory went over her head and is just going to do the thing anyways. Scotch tape is there, and scares the living shit out of her because, like, we're told that, like, her legs are so, like, fucked up and gangrenous that, like, they just look really horrible. Which gets her to repeat a thing that Gorgon, really early on in his, like, thanks for killing me, like, sticky note.
If you are that he had left. This, you finally
yeah, one of his lines that I forgot was a thing that, like, matters is him saying, "I'm not a monster, I just look like one," which isn't true because Gorgon killed a bunch of people and is a monster. But, you know, whatever. The story defines monster in a very specific way. But, yeah, she begs Scotch to go get Glory. Like,
Highly specific. Yeah. No, I don't... It's an interesting thing that I think I need to, like, figure out how to have more empathy for, because at this point in my life, I don't understand how, like, someone can, like... I made the mistake of checking Facebook earlier today, and there was somebody going, like... who was doing, like, a sort of generic, like, lib meme of, like, "I like MAGA hats." And then, "And why?" And then clip from Inglourious Basterds. "I like to see Nazis in uniforms. Lets us know who they are." And beneath in the comments, there was, like, a couple of, like, real smooth brain takes, but the smoothest brain was, "Huh, I guess I'm a Nazi then." Yes.
Yes, you are. Congratulations. Yeah.
And, like, how you can, like, at this point, like, be on the side of total ecological collapse and turning the clock back on the 14th Amendment. Like, how can you be down for, like, Diary of Anne Frank shit and, like, not understand that you were, like, you are a party to evil, that you are, like, among the horde of cannibal orcs?
Baddies.
I guess just internalized disavowal, like, but, like, it's so weird to read a story, like, from an author who, like, lives in that world of, like, I don't know why it would be at all surprising, like, as far as we've gotten, like, with, like,
because it still is, like, it's impossible to, like, because our core values are different from his, so it's, like, impossible to believe, no, you really are this bad, you have to be, like, no, this has to be a front, this has to be a gaffe, a trick, a disguise. No one can be this dissonant, but no, it really do be that way. He really is this dissonant. The thing I was gonna bring up, I guess, with the monsterhood theme that gets used in the story. I'll probably talk about this a lot next week as well. But, like, one of the things that, like, Somber uses as kind of, like, a, like, shorthand in the story is the idea that, like, monsterhood is, like, a prescriptive role that doesn't necessarily, like, that isn't necessarily descriptive of the person. Like, you may look like a monster and act like a monster and talk like a monster, but that doesn't make you a monster as long as your, like, values are true. And this comes from, like, a group of, like... But, it's a very simple, it really just comes down to, they just believe in the
idea. You don't know what's in my heart.
Yeah, it's ends justify the means, but, like...
No, it's you don't know what's in my heart. Like, no, it's a different thing from ends justify the means. It's it's a very sort of, I think we can blame United States Protestants for this mode of disavowal. Like, it's a very American sort of thing, wherein because it's salvation by acts is frowned upon, that, like, no good deeds will get you into the kingdom of heaven, only salvation through Christ, meaning that as long as you say "I'm sorry" anything is permissible, like, fundamentally. They'll never say it in such brute terms. They will never like cop to that being like the end result of a long string of noise coming out of them. But it all boils down to, you don't know what's in my heart. Like, I meant well when I ripped that little girl's face off and ate it in front of their mother. Like, there's a cultural, among, like, especially American Protestants, built in, cognitive disavowal of, like, no, I am true, true to my values, regardless of my actual actions. I mean well in my heart, and a perfect example of this, like the typification is, I almost want to put it in the show notes of this episode, but there's when Ronald Reagan came on TV to say he was sorry about the Iran-Contra affair.
You mean those war crimes he did?
Yeah, you know, when he like did crimes to do more crimes to fund terrorists in South America to like butcher families, like a long series of crimes, all to like support and fund the Contras, whose job and whose sole activity was to make grotesque human art pieces out of civilians to discourage communism. But he meant what, like, he has a good heart. Like, he you can't say that there was anything bad in his heart when he did everything in his power to ensure those men could chop the heads off of an entire village, drain their blood out, and make macabre displays of them sitting around a dinner table. Like,
I think we got to save some of this vitriol for next week, I think.
Anyway, no, it's like, this is the Reaganite, like, I meant well. It's, my heart is good. You can't judge me for anything I've done. I've made my peace with Jesus.
With Pony Jesus. But anyways, we get like a okay scene. Like, it's better than most scenes in the story. I'll give it that. A relative good scene. Where BJ gets in touch with Glory, because like Scotch gets Glory comes back to talk to BJ, and BJ is like begging her to stop, that like she needs to just accept that she's going to die and make peace with like the fact that she has literally not even days, she has like hours to live at this point, and that like you need to like move on, and we can't make this deal with the devil, like the consequences will be so catastrophic, which is like the only time I've ever like agreed with Blackjack about anything in this story so far, I guess. But Gloria insists that she's not going to give up on trying to save Blackjack, but they make the compromise that like no Sanguine at the very least, and like the subtext is probably me reading too much into it, but it kind of like the like energy of the scene feels cool, because like it's this like sort of not like this admission of like of her or like her inevitable death, but like still trying to like maintain some hope that she can be saved, but like this with this very specific crux being like this thing that they know neither of them can compromise on. But again, it's probably me just reading too much into it. The rest of the scene is just very sappy. I'm gonna glide over it because we got more to say this week. But I'm just gonna say it's the kind of sappy romantic stuff that I personally like. It's the only time these characters have ever really felt like a couple. There's a lot of like romantic, goofy, sappy dialogue between the two of them that I enjoy. But the crew talks about like options, about what they can do to actually try and save her, with BJ in the room. There's a lot of discussion that like there's probably nothing they can do, because like one of the biggest hurdles is that, like, despite all of her external mutation, it's nowhere near as bad as the roadmap of tumors that her insides have become, and like taint is so pervasive in its ability to like be malignant that there is a really strong chance that even if they got like organ transplants, that they would just be corrupted by like the pre-existing taint in her body.
Oh man, so just lay it on. Like, keep pouring that gravy. Oh, I'm so into this torture porn. Oh, there's more. Oh. I'm not.
All right.
I'm very, very turned off.
Yeah, well.
Turned off, tuned out. Oh.
Well, continue to be tuned out, because we haven't gotten to the tuned out part yet. We haven't gotten to the super tone deaf part yet. Lacuna goes all ultra nihilist on them, that like, and kind of weirdly religious, but like whatever, that she's like, well, anything you would do to her now would potentially compromise her soul. And like, that's a greater destruction that you could do to her than her body failing on her. Like she insists that they should let her die pure, which has so much problems with it. Like, it's another one of those issues that I always have with stories. When you present theories and mythology in your story, especially in something like this, all of it's true. So, like, she's actually correct, and there's no articulation of an argument against her. And souls are real in the setting. So her soul being corrupted and damned forever is a very real consequence of potentially meddling with anything else they can do. There is no argument against it in the story, which is just dumb. That's not, I don't know. There's a fucking dumb plot line where 21 is like, I don't want her to die. And Lacuna is like, oh, of course you don't want her to die. You're in love with her. And 21's like, well, I'm in love with Priest. And Lacuna just fires back at him that that love is not real. And that you've always been in love with BJ this whole time, because hetero relationships are more real than homo relationships, don't you know? And also remember fucking months back, like literally episode one, where I was praising Somber for not making making a story in which a slave was in love with their oppressor. Guess what? Guess what? Remember all that good faith? Poof, into the wind. Part I've two.
I wanted to be with this edgy horse ever since she raped me. Was when we were both children. Is that what this is going to? Oh, okay.
I mean, not really, but like it's there's a incredibly like lame attempt at justifying this, that like Blackjack has changed since she's left the stable and has become a different person and he's in love with that person. But like, I mean, it's not even necessarily like out of character. It's just like really like an uninteresting twist to make it that he's in love with her. Because, I mean, like, I was praising before that, like, one of the biggest hurdles that a lot of fanfiction faces is that unless it's a story that's explicitly about gay men, virtually no gay men exist in fanfiction. So the idea of there being one is a cool concept, and it's just kind of disappointing, personally, to make him bi. Like, it's not really that big of a deal, but then, like, there's a lot of baggage tied to this relationship that, like, in real life would not be possible. Like, there'd just be no... that's just not going to happen, I'm sorry. That's super, super disgusting to make a story about this kind of thing. But like, it's just, I don't know. 21 is just a waste of time, like just entirely. I'll talk about this more next week, and probably every recap episode that we do. That 21 is just a massive waste of time, and he serves nothing in the story. Anyways, on to page 3 of my notes.
I mean, a while back, like I like was pretty excited. Like I advised. And to not let the door hit him on the flank on the way the fuck out.
Yeah, he's the love interest. That's why he has to stay. Fucking, oh man, there's a bunch of dumb extra details. Yeah, 21 has a fit. BJ apologizes. for all the things that she's done to him and killing his lover and all that shit. We get an extra detail to, like, make Scotch less complicit in this whole thing, that, like, if you disobeyed with the authority, you would be whipped and beaten into submission, which is something that hadn't been brought up to this point, but I think only exists as an explanation to, like, make Scotch specifically more forgivable, besides the fact that she's a baby, like, but whatever. But anyways, time to gut this story again. We get let's call it a flashback. BJ basically gets memory orbed without being memory orbed. She like goes into a memory that is like a memory orb, but it works slightly differently. It has different icons for when you're slipping into it and everything. Instead of the familiar O's, you get tildes instead. BJ goes into a weird hallucination about being in the body of an assassin that we could not possibly care about because the context is not there. And even when this gets revealed who this character is, it does not matter to us at all. It's a completely wasted plot point. It's just for some metaphorical mirroring between her and BJ. But she's killing prominent political members just as the bombs were falling. But yeah, that happens. This is the one argument this crew is having right now that I actually like. There becomes a discussion about what are they going to do in a post-Blackjack scenario. Like, what is actually their plans if BJ actually just kicks the bucket and they don't have any like and they can't fix her? Which I do like, because it's time.
Like, it's a direct reference to, like, how pathetically dependent Sombra's made all of these characters. Artificially made all these characters, too.
Yeah. So their plan is kind of like a half, I don't know, maybe we just do what she was doing, and, like, a lot of them are just, like, do not have their heart to, like, do that. The only real, like, plan they kind of settle on is the idea that, like, they're going to try and clean up the Reapers and the gangs to try and make, like, the maybe fix this war to some degree, because it's what Blackjack would have wanted. And that becomes, like, Rampage's specific personal goal, is to try and, like, fix this problem as, like, kind of like a, I guess, like an apology
with
to, like,
as much
all of the
killing as possible.
Yeah, that's
what
Rampage
I am unsurprised did. This is a plan that Horsepool endorses. Well, let's see. What's a post-mortem gift? What can we do in our friend's honor? She did like shooting people a lot. always looking for an excuse to shoot people, so I guess we could kill a lot of people.
But yeah, it's the only thing I've liked so far out of this. Glory is still really adamant that, like, she has some sort of plan, and she's jury-rigging something, and that's what the next couple of days are going to be. And everyone else is kind of like hand rings and is worried for her because she seems to be pretty out of her gourd now, because they're just like there's no hope for Blackjack at this point is the thing they're trying to hammer home. But yeah, so the plan is they're gonna leave the ship for whatever reason. So now it's just the Sea Pirates, and Scotch is there with Black to tend to Blackjack, and they're like moored at one of the bridges. She manages to coax some sort of plan out of Scotch, and the best guess that Scotch can make out of Glory's plan is that they're going to try and, like, jury rig some kind of super regeneration talisman, like the thing that Rampage has, and the hope is they're going to, like, plug it into BJ and then, like, atomize her like they do Rampage and try to, like, fix her. Like, it's the most bare and bones hope this works plan possible, but it's basically all they have.
It's a Hail Mary. I don't know, you got magic in a setting. I don't know, like,
it's they have magic, but magic has something I've never had to really talk about much in because it's just never mattered up to this point, is that, like, magic has a lot of, let's call them rules, like, I refuse to use the term rules because it's bad. But there's a lot of, like, stipulations on how magic can work. And a lot of it is that, like, because they're in a post-apocalyptic dark age, no one really super knows how to recreate a lot of the technology that was part of the Golden Age. So A lot of it's just detritus that they hope they can get working. Magic in the setting, because of like some of the rules established by the original show, is that unless you specifically have a cutie mark that makes you good at magic, the only magic you can potentially do as a unicorn is magic that is associated with your cutie mark. So if you're if you were really good at sewing, all your magic would be really good about doing sewing and making dresses, but you couldn't, say, teleport.
So let me phrase it another way. It's a dumb world by a dumb author. I don't know what to expect anymore. Like I don't know how low below limbo bar of like we can go.
You don't know how the Duke boys are going to get out of this one. What bolt of lightning is going to hit that fixes the problem? But yeah. Anyways, they're gonna memory warp BJ again. I don't remember why. I guess just to kill time. Well, they gotta wait around for. It amuses me. But first, Scotch has some survivor's guilt that she's trying to work through, and like being complicit in the nightmare that is Stable 99, and BJ sort of assures her that like she didn't really do anything wrong, because like her role in society was relatively minimal in comparison to like Blackjack, who was part of like the police force and therefore like directly causing the atrocity of the stable, which I mean is like another level of cognizance that is normally absent in this story.
It's really uncomfortable and annoying when one of these people like gets their head above water for a breath and like acknowledges like some of their own shit before diving back under into the murk of the disavowal.
Yeah.
Here's a fun game I'm playing in order to try and keep in it. I'm imagining that everyone is like nodding and humoring Blackjack whenever he says something. Just remove all the consonants from every sentence he says in this chapter.
Yeah, she's so drugged, whatever. Anyways,
no, just the pain alone, like
man.
Every instant and every involuntary twitch of those like completely hollowed out noodle like cancer noodles.
Okay, I gotta get through. I forgot what this memory orb was about, and now we gotta get here. Okay, so forget everything up to this point. Memory orb time. Months and months ago at this point, probably, or at least weeks, we had like a dumb side story in one of the memory orbs where Big Macintosh, big hero of the Imperium, Big Macintosh, was like going on a date with like this little tiny pony named Maripony, and they had like a little cute relationship or whatever, and she like works for Trisparkle, and that's the whole thing. And Big Mac is really smitten with her. We get like a follow-up to that where Big Mac is gonna go play pool with her. And he's like talking with his like commanding officers, and they're all like joking around, and for some reason people are playing D&D there. Anyways, we fast forward to the actual date with Maripony, and it's all cute. And they're at the pool, and they're playing pool, and then they get into and they talk about conversations about all like the relationship so far, and they're kind of like a lot of implication that this is like pretty late into their relationship. Like they've like, I was gonna say consummate, but that's like a weird word. They fucked. They're like deep in the relationship, and this is just before they're gonna get married, because like that was like a thing where like he proposed to her, and then she needed like sort out being with the family and all that stuff. That was like a whole plot point. But anyways, a big dumb bar brawl happens because like Big Mac gets into a fight with some drunks, and then it turns into a whole big fight. This really only happens because that way Maripony could be injured. And then we can find out that bum bum bum, she was Twilight Sparkle in disguise the entire time, for their entire relationship. She'd been using magic to disguise herself. Because we find out during this that Twilight Sparkle was in love with Big Mac this whole time. He wouldn't give her the time of day because they come from different social strata, since he's just like a dumb hick and she's like a ministry mayor at this point, so it would never work. and that was this whole thing. So she disguised herself for different reasons, and it just so happened that they ended up in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, yeah, they fucked. And then that whole thing gets called off, and the whole relationship falls apart. And then, yeah, and then Big Mac has this big cry in the rain moment. That would be sentimental if, like, I didn't care, like, if I cared at all about this. But I only have to bring this up because of a fucking insane-ass plot point that's coming in, like, two chapters. Keep in mind that there's also this big baby plot point that was happening, and a political official had to get an abortion, but instead of an abortion, they, like, baby-swapped into another person's womb, and then that baby ended up in Stable 99. Just keep that in mind. But we don't have time to address that, because after this fucking memory orb is the fucking content warning time. This is at the very fucking least, Somber has the, like, awareness to include a content warning in his own story. I'm assuming that's probably something that, like, the editors included later on or something. But regardless, there is actually a content warning here that this part can be skipped. But, so, you know, since this is just before it's going to get real heavy, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Go for a run, take a nap. If you have medication you should be taking, take your medication. If you haven't drank any water recently, consider drinking some water.
Cute animal videos. I would recommend Weird's recommendation of the week, hyenas. There was actually some very cute... I should have... Gosh darn it. I should have looked up the name of the... The Lion Whisperer. The Lion Whisperer, ironically, has some very good hyena footage. Wherein, like, he like, demonstrates how to, like, potentially not get mauled by a hyena, and that involves, like, knowing it for its entire lifespan, in part.
Yeah, as you do.
Yes. Turns out that when, like, if you catch it in the right mood, a hyena can be extremely cute. So just do some of that. Like, put the cast on pause. Enjoy some yeens. And then gird yourself for what comes next.
Yep. Anyways, let's get into it. So we hear the noise of the entirety of the pirate ship crew getting gunned down by, like, scavengers. While Scotch and BJ, like, try to, like, hide. BJ is handed a gun and basically pointed in the direction of the door to the room, and he tells, like, Scotch to go hide in, like, the bilge pump, essentially, or the bilge room, for the duration of this. So I'm going to be fairly frank and brief with this and try not to be too detailed, because, like, this just makes my stomach turn
just the
to think about any of this.
Yeah, the blunt matter's a fact.
Okay, so turns out that every single fucking person that BJ has ever left alive up to this point has at some point formed a posse, I guess, looking to, like, take revenge against Blackjack. And in the serendipitous moment where they decided to take down this ship, they find that Blackjack, completely immobilized, is left alive.
Superman Revenge Society.
Exactly. Including the guy that she shot his dick off, the guy who she killed the head of the gang member, whatever, the guy who was the son of the slaver who got all of his own women all killed out of pettiness. So all those cool people. So they decided to take all their revenge, incredibly physical. This becomes the most grotesque ever, because it is graphic in its description. But so first, because I have to talk about this because it's plot relevant, she is initially, and I cannot stress this enough, if we laugh about this, this is not because of the, like, it's the sheer uncomfortableness of this, but initially Blackjack is nailed to the floor, so that she can't move around at all. And then the entirety of this posse takes turns violently gang raping Blackjack. It is written out in grotesque, gory detail. It is ugly and awful and unnecessary to the story to exist.
I mean, it's an important moral lesson about the dangers of mercy.
I guess, yeah.
Should have killed every last one of them. I guess, yep. Like, yeah.
That's apparently, the, I guess that's the moral here.
This is such a like an amazing Chuddy fantasy. Like, this is the apotheosis of all of Somber's like difficulty with women and his like contempt for his own protagonist, which has come up a couple times before. Like, we've like in an interesting like mode of self-hatred that we've had this weird disavowal of going back and forth of her being the like colonization of victimhood fantasy, like Chud fantasy, like the oh so put upon Ubermensch, and yet also as long as he's torturing this female character, like he can have contempt for like the sex havers and the drug users. Yes. when she's variably either a slut or like totally sexually inexperienced, flip-flopping between like you can tell when Blackjack has moved into self-insert mode and when she is like back to I want to rape little Pip for being, yeah, like
a woman
too powerful, a femoid. This is the apotheosis. Like, there's no good way to read from every angle. this is a tesseract of shit. Like, turn this cube of bad on its side and look at it through a different lens, and whoops, still bad, because it is such a passion play. It is,
oh, literally,
yeah.
She's literally nailed. Like, I'm not finished. She's nailed to the floor, violently beaten and raped, and like, just to add more to the metaphor, she's like, her horn is carved off, and so like the blood and imagery of it is very similar to the crown of thorns as well. Like, she, it is literal in its biblical metaphor. This is literally Jesus on the cross. This is such hack writing mixed with such grotesque, like, because like it's also has so much grotesque baggage of like violence committed against women for virtually no reason. I don't know, there's no point to this. Well, no, there is a point to this, and we will get to that in a few paragraphs. So, to continue on, though, after this grotesquerie, this horror show, this voyeurism of sexual violence, BJ is then saved from death by the rest of her crew showing up in time to, like, kill the rapists. But Blackjack, in her now magnanimous state of agony and torture, forgives them all, because she believes that if they die, there is no way they can make up for the sins they have committed, and therefore they have to be let go, despite the like despite the naysaying of her apostles. They are let go. The
Sacred Heart goes aflame. Passes upward into the heaven. No, well, first they've got a barrier in they've got to put them in Joseph of Arimathea's family tomb, horse of Arimathea stable.
Yeah.
Oh,
before she'll come back.
Like, hey, out there, if any of you like have any like are about to like are formulating in your mind some sort of like, you guys just snowflakes, this is you're totally not like, you're totally overreading into it, there's nothing like psychosexual about this. Imagine, try to imagine for a moment, like try to picture a heterosexual man writing a Superman fanfic in which the Superman Revenge Society does this to your boy Supes. Try to imagine like a legit hetero dude doing that. Because I can imagine someone like I can imagine like a deeply frustrated closeted teen boy writing that story. But if you're gonna tell me that like anyone has it in them, has the creative energy or interest to write something like this happened to Superman, like Lex and take a random assortment out of Superman's rogues gallery. They nail Supes to the ground with kryptonite bolts and do this to him. You think anybody's written that? Anybody like has the motivation to write that? Fucking no, because this is a purely psychosexual, like,
it's a revenge fantasy.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Fucking
okay. And since the nails are driven so hard into the ground, there's no way, and her legs are so fucked up anyways. There is no way of removing them, so the only plan is to remove her legs entirely. So Blackjack is now blind, been violently injured, dying, cancerous, and also missing all of her legs.
Somber has Saran wrap over his fucking keyboard as he types this with his other hand.
you think he would care to put Saran wrap? Ugh.
I gotta have something. I gotta, like, it's look, Fi, I don't want to be accused of strawmanning. I want to give him the most benefit of the doubt I can.
I've apologized multiple times in this story before, but like I'm just so like physically like I'm so at a spoons about this. Like I'm so emotionally injured by this like scene, having to read it over again. I knew it was coming.
Speaking of fantasy violence, like I had to like choke down, like, praise me for my saintliness and that I've used like self redirecting techniques to stop conceiving of the violence I would like personally wish to directly and almost reflexively inflict on Somber's personal physical body or that of anybody who like subscribes to this damn thing. Anybody who like read this and like, this is fine. Like I really do want to find that person, like interrogate them briefly and then just like hurt them.
So I think in the past I've been a little shaky on how defensive I am of Blackjack up to this point because of like I care more than this author does. No, fuck that. This character is now my daughter. this character is no longer yours, Somber. I care more than you do about her. And I didn't want this to happen to her. But you did. You thought it was a good course of action. I hate you for it. Oh god, we gotta move forwards though. So after the fact, Blackjack is now Black Stump, and she makes some fucking jokes to try and like paper over the atrocity that was just committed to her because she is in full like denial mode of the like of
Torsi,
the
torso horse Tasha and your dreams come true.
Glory keeps pretty tight-lipped about what Plan B is to try and fix her at this point. There's sort of a mention of the idea that like this all go to plan if they can get her to where they need to get going, and she doesn't die before then, she doesn't keel over, and there's a lot of mention that if they've called in like every favor they can get, they're getting all the warriors together for this one, everyone they can con into helping on this situation. Is going to be helping for whatever the fuck the plan B is to try and save BJ from her inevitable like terminal death. There is a dark scene that like in a better story you could almost like because of just like the direness of it, the sort of black comedy of it, of like 21 giving like tips on like how to cope with everything that's just happened to her is like so dark of a bit of black comedy that like I almost enjoy it. Like there's a certain sense of it, right? Like a certain angle you can look at it of like, oh yeah, this is the thing that had been happening to 21 up to this point. And Somber, in his incredible chud moronicness, did this so that these characters are now on the same like level, like the same level of atrocity. Like BJ is now in the same space as 21, and so like that now they can like be in a proper relationship because they're now equally damaged in the same way. Which is fuck that. I don't care about that. What I do care about though is that like the direness of like the actual using of 21's fucked up backstory to like be this sort of horrible comfort and kind of like pragmatist and like teaching her how to cope with everything.
So he can be there to mansplain.
I mean, yeah, no. We are ignoring the substance of the text. I'm just talking about what can be salvaged from this scene is this dark humor of, oh, like, because he's not even like mocking her about it. He's just like, so this is how you like deal with this, like in a physical way. Like this is how you clean yourself up and you learn to move on from it. And like that is a good use of your fucking bullshit bad backstory. But that's not like, obviously that's not the like actual substance of the work. But at this point, like, it's the only thing I can take from this.
I mean, take something. Like it's better than where I am, which I'm completely checked out. Like I'm completely dead inside.
You're in another dimension now at this point.
Here's my take for a fix. Here's a like the what I'm envisioning dark comedy wise is oh shit, I can't remember the name of the author who was responsible for Waiting for Godot. But a very Waiting for Godot scene where like this like escaped prostitute slave is comforting themselves over their like friend's ruined condition while the friend like drools and like shudders and is completely like hyper unconscious awake mm-hmm. but checked out explaining to them like trying to like explain coping mechanisms to a squirming squirming lump of pain who cannot hear them there's no conversation happening here. There's like a fleshy embodiment of suffering and someone coping with that by pretending that like they're talking to them.
This is also a chance for him to forgive her finally for killing his lover. And like, yeah, there's a whole bunch of this that doesn't matter. The only like saving potential grace from this is if you contextualize this whole as Blackjack is dying and therefore like everyone around her is in like the like that horrible grief stage where there's just like trying to make the passing as painless as possible. So like regrets and resentments just don't feel like they matter that much anymore to like the or grievances that they could carry to that particular person, since you know they're dying and like it doesn't matter anymore. Like it's like, oh yeah, you did all this horrible stuff, but like you're gonna be dead in like hours, so like it doesn't really matter whether or not like anything. So like I don't know, if you contextualize it from that perspective, this stuff kind of like matters more and makes more sense. But I mean, like, is the actual like tone of the story. Baby Killer Rampage also shows up and like mocks Blackjack for wanting to die, because she's basically like, oh well, now that you want to die, I'm not gonna give you a mercy kill because you didn't take it early and you've denied me mercy kills before. So like Baby Killer Rampage, I guess, is bitter about Blackjack. But fuck, we are almost.
Oh, now the shoe's on the other cancer noodle, isn't it?
The Claude Pony shoe is on the other cancer.
How do you feel about Mercy euthanizing now, huh? Huh? Poke.
Yeah.
Bet you were Bet you wish you were more open to letting me kill whoever the fuck I wanted. That's almost amazing. Like, if that were self-aware, that would actually be an incredible, like, a la carte, like a la carte abridged sort of, like, villain. Like one of the deeply comically evil, like, stance to take.
I got one last scene before we do our wrap up and stuff, because we've been going pretty long. So the final scene of it is they've been drawn out to the sea, and in the story, the sea is a metaphor for like freedom and escape and all that stuff. And BJ is wrapped up in Glory's arms, and is like Glory is like cooing, you know, soft things into her, saying that everything's going to be all right. They're almost there. And at this point, like BJ, like her heartbeat, like becomes audible, and we got our final sentimental moments as like her heartbeats starts to slow down and then finally stop, and Blackjack dies at the end of the scene.
Good riddance.
She's my baby, though.
In both like, senses. Like, she's finally free of the narrator. She's finally... Yeah.
Somber can't do anything to her anymore. And the footnote for this, just to, like, suck all the fucking sentimentality and good vibes out of this, we get footnote, game over, and... I think in the original version is because I'm almost dead to right certain this was edited. There was like a kind of like half joke about like, would you like to continue from a previous save? Which just sucks out everything out of this fucking scene. It's meant to be a moment to confirm the idea that no, Blackjack is dead. Like she's dead. Like the video game abstractions even say she's like terminated. She's hit zero life points. She is no more. But like it goes so far to undermine like all of this buildup that's been done over this last like chapter, over contextualizing it, and it just sucks. It's another dumb bad move for no reason, and then you've been doing this for so long that you're stuck.
So I keep making jokes about like how I want it to be. I especially want it to be like. Like, if this was the intended end of the story, like, pretty good way of completely turning off any sane audience to wanting to, like, go any further. Yep. Well, all right. This shit's reached its peak. Like,
terminus. Yeah.
I officially don't want any more.
I want to be off the ride.
Thank you for stopping. Like, yeah, it's a hell of a, like, emergency brake cord. Like... was there a break in the release of this chapter to the next? Like, was there like a long like high? Is there any indication that like Somber intended this to be like the like full arc of the story?
Yes, sort of. I guess in 2 weeks' time I'll be able to talk about it. But there's a bunch of like paragraphs and footnotes and like not even interviews, like Reddit posts, basically. From Somber, talking about like the plan going forwards and how that changed between these two chapters, between chapter 33 and 34. So that will be something I'll be able to talk about in like 2 weeks. Maybe we might touch on it in the next week, but I mostly want to save that for recap stuff. But as far as I know, there was a break. I was not part of that break because I read this after this chapter had happened. So like I was like, okay, that all happened on to chapter 34, like, you know, and like
so
just
like I can my guess is if I were in your shoes and a much younger man with whatever brain disease like makes younger men able to tolerate like slop like this, before we started recording we were talking about like there's a magic median, there's an exact age bracket wherein it is acceptable to enjoy Inuyasha. If you exit that bracket and still can like look at an episode of Inuyasha and like gain some sort of non-ironic enjoyment out of it, like I'm sorry to tell you that you're suffering from some sort of developmental condition, like something.
There's something actually stunted. Like, yeah, there's something actually wrong.
So I can see reading the next chapter, because knowing there's another chapter, like, surely there's something to apologize for everything that you just read. Was that your feeling? Like there's gotta be some. Some explanation or excuse for this garbage?
So I knew some spoilers about things that happened later on. Like, I knew the thing that got me into reading this in the first place is a very distinct aspect of Blackjack going forwards into the future that changes, and that was what I was here for, and this was the point I got to, so I'm like, okay, cool, okay, that all happened, so we get to the thing next that I actually wanted to see, and we are going to laugh and make fun of me next, like, in 2 weeks' time, about how, like, an incredibly, incredibly superficial detail is what kept me reading the story, and it's the dumbest thing. So, we'll have to...
There's motivation for you to tune in next week, listener! We're gonna dunk on Fi a bit.
Yeah, I like doing this to us. God. So I guess we should do our wrap ups, because next week will be a recap.
Let's restate a little bit of our mission statement. I don't know how much. It's been a while since I listened to episode one, but like part of this is for Fi's sake. And I, dear listener, are here to like help Fi exercise this from himself, because he's been thinking about this ever since he read it. Like, this whole fucking thing has haunted him
for like 5 years now at this point. Six years.
So we're finally, like, the purpose of this podcast, you and I are helping my friend Fi, who you should care about. I care about him, but like, honestly, I redirect all that violence I felt towards Sombra and his fans to you, if you don't care enough about Fi, to be here to help him to not have anything in him to talk about this anymore.
Listen, therapy's expensive and podcasts are $9 a month, so I don't have to tell you.
Anyway, so this is we have reached an important point of catharsis for all the shit that's happened in this episode. I want to thank you for coming all this way with us. Well, real quick, Fi, important question. Is there anything better we could be reading right now?
Well, again, I really super have not been reading like FOE Fix a lot recently. So I don't have much that I can recommend there. All I've been reading.
Well, through their silence, the audience has been complicit in authorizing us to talk about whatever the fuck we want.
So unless you have something to recommend, I can just just give like a quick recommendation to some sappy romance.
Universal Paperclips is one of the greatest sci-fi games of all time.
Yeah, you were playing that yesterday, right?
It consumed my entire day yesterday. Universal Paperclips. It's about an AI that makes paperclips.
And then the logical extremity of, like, the universe into paperclips, basically.
It's mind-blowing in its implications, and, like, subversively I'm gonna turn into a Rick and Morty fan real briefly. You have to know a little bit about the AI theory, I guess. Like, I suspect the things that make me enjoy it are a result of, like, some of the stuff I've read about the development of AI and hypothetical, like, and, like, computer evolutionary models and, like, So it's a very popular game. Most people who've played it have gotten a lot of enjoyment out of it. But my specific enjoyment is out of, like, some of the subtler, darker implications in a very dark game. There's plenty there to enjoy on, like, a surface level, but there's a lot of subtext that is, like, astonishingly dark and interesting, and I want to write a whole series of short stories about the world that Universal Paperclips presents. And I think the protagonist of Universal Paperclips, you, the player, what you are playing in Universal Paperclips, is the most impressive and is an antagonist, bad guy AI that I desperately want to see in a comic book or movie. Like, go play Universal Paperclips. I won't spoil it though. Like, to try and sell you on it, I kind of want to give you some tidbits of like these sudden kind of surprising turns that the game takes. But it's a clicker game with like surprise twists, wherein the paradigm like shifts violently and unsettlingly, and it does have an end. Unlike most clicker games, there is a definitive like end point you can reach. So yeah, that's my recommendation for the week. If you want us to, if you guys are happy hearing us talk about things other than ponies at the what else could we be reading right now, please tell us about that in the comments or on iTunes reviews. Like us, star us, it promotes us in the algorithm of the various podcast hosting sites. Retweet when Fi tweets about the podcast, as he does every week at Thou Art Fi on Twitter. At Weirdington E is also a Twitter account that will be linked in the doobly doo in the description text. Sure not, Sam. Ooh, oh my guts! This one actually like churned my guts a bit. Like,
yeah,
this was an emotional episode. Fine, so, fuck. Like,
No.
I
want to say it this time. I think this time this really has been a terrible mistake.